Interview with Joe Reed, R-E-E-D, Chairman of Alabama Democratic Conference, comma, Black Political Organization Statewide, comma, and Vice Chairman for Minority Affairs for Alabama State Democratic Party, July 10th, 1974.
How about giving us just a little bit of background about yourself, personal biographical background, and also how you got involved in politics?
I'm a native Alabama. I'm a native Alabama. I attended the public schools in Alabama.
Where?
In a place called Conecuh County. That's at Evergreen. It's about 95 miles south of here, between Montgomery and Mobile.
That's in the Black Belt, right?
No, Conecuh County was not a Black Belt county. I left Conecuh County in 1956. That's when I finished high school.
How do you spell that county?
C-O-N-E-C-U-H. Some writers pronounce it as Conecuh, but it is Conecuh. It's an Indian name. I went into the service. I came out in 58. I attended Alabama State University, which is located here in Montgomery, for my undergraduate work. While there, I participated in the sit-ins. I helped to organize SNCC in Raleigh, North Carolina. I participated in the Freedom Rides. In other words, I was involved in the civil rights movement, actively involved in the civil rights movement. I was put on probation for helping for participating in the sit-ins in Montgomery. While in school, I served as a student body president as well as class president. Class president, of course, preceded the year. I served as student body president, which was my senior year. Aside from that, I taught school for one semester. I then went to graduate school where I proceeded. An MA in political science at Western Reserve University at that time. Of course, it's Case Western Reserve now. Subsequent to that, I came back and I got involved in the Teachers Association. I was employed as executive secretary of the Alabama State Teachers Association, where I served for 5 years prior to the merger of the Black and White Associations up until 1969. There were two separate associations in all of your southern states. And my involvement in politics, my first political involvement, I guess, came in 1960 in Jim Folsom's campaign, John F. Kennedy's campaign, rather. At that time, there were very few black voters, but those few blacks we had, we tried to get them out. I was relatively young at that point, but politically young anyway. And of course, 62, one might say, was my first real active campaign where I campaigned for Big Jim Folsom, who was running against George Wallace, along with some other candidates. So that was my first major political race. My involvement in politics dates back, I say, to campus politics and other social cases of trying to better our people, status in American society, as well as trying to just help blacks find their place in the sun.
What's your position now with the
education? I'm the associate executive secretary of the association, of the Alabama Education Association. That's my where I earn my living. My political affiliations, of course. I was a delegate to the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. Arthur Shore was in Birmingham, and I was the delegate. Then, of course, in 1972, I did not run for delegate. I was a page. However, I had a chance to speak before the convention, because I also serve as chairman of the Political Black Caucus of Alabama. We think we have one of the most effective caucuses in the nation, largely because our caucus is probably one of the older caucuses in the nation. When I say old, our caucus is about 14 years old. Where this group was put together in 1960 to help John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson. I believe that it was Congressman Dawson out of Illinois who suggested to John F. Kennedy, why don't you try to get those few blacks in the South who do have to vote for you? Because there was some folks who felt at one point, if you remember the campaign, that Kennedy had not really tied himself closely enough to the blacks. And there was a meeting held in Atlanta, Georgia. And of course, from that meeting, it was suggested that each one would go back and each state would go back and form a caucus. And of course, fellows like Arthur Schulz and Rufus Lewis and others came back and organized the Alabama Democratic Conference. And so the conference was conceived at that particular time. Now, since that time, we've had chairman. I've been chairman for 4 years. I was first elected chairman around 1970, just preceding the Alvin Brewer, George Wallace election. We have in this state about 60 counties which are affiliated with the Alabama Democratic Conference. In other words, the conference is not a political party. It is a political pressure group. It's a political caucus. Of course, we've tried to make it so that no candidate can get elected without the caucus endorsement. That's the way we have tried to make it that effective. The caucus has representatives from each congressional district making up the executive committee. We have two meetings annually, an annual meeting and a semi-annual meeting. The annual meeting is much bigger than the semi-annual meeting because the semi-annual meeting you were in workshops and covered some resolutions you missed in the last and the annual meeting. We've had the national speakers speak before the caucus. Hubert Humphrey, for example. Maynard Jackson, for example. Coretta King, for example. Ed Musk spoke in Birmingham for us on the 20th of April, but we had our state meeting there. Sergeant Shriver and others, just to give some names. We endorse political candidates. We take position on candidates. The way we arrive at decisions is kind of a people's type thing. Oftentimes, we're accused of smoke-filled room politics, to be sure. But the way we try to operate the organization is that the chairman has the authority to appoint the committees. We usually use volunteers. That is to say that, let me give an example of the last meeting that we had in Birmingham. We will appoint, say, 200-member screening committee, or maybe 100, depending on the number of people there, delegates from the respective counties. But it is drawn from the local leaders. We'll set up as many subcommittees as we have candidates seeking office. That may be a subcommittee for the governor, a subcommittee for the lieutenant governor, a subcommittee for the attorney general, a subcommittee for, well, I should say the attorney general, because the attorney general and the Supreme Court judges are all under one. We call that the judiciary committee. But we have these various committees depending on the number of officers running, as I suggested earlier. Each subcommittee has a chairman. State chairman of the caucus has responsibility for naming the chairman. The chairman of these committees will meet and interview the candidates, and that subcommittee will decide which candidate it feels is the best for blacks, the state of Alabama, and the nation, without putting those in any priority, but the better candidate.
Did they interview the candidates?
Yes, yes. We have a procedure. This was initiated since I've been chairman. We don't endorse candidates who don't come to our meeting. We don't endorse in the dark.
They come to the annual meeting?
They come to the annual meeting of our conference. Hell, they're there. They're there in big numbers.
Then you endorse at that same meeting?
Yes, we endorse. They'll come in, we'll interview them. And once the subcommittee makes its report, the main committee comes back together. That means the 200, 150, or the 300 delegates you're using are making up the committee. And we have varied. We've varied from 100 to 250. And of course, our position is that if the people want them, they'll have them. So how many are on the committee doesn't bother somebody. So each subcommittee then will make its report back to the main committee. The main committee has the responsibility of adopting the subcommittee's report or rejecting it. It can do that. Once the main committee adopts the reports of all, that usually becomes the position of the caucus. However, the following day, the delegates assemble, got to ratify the subcommittee's report, okay? Not the subcommittee, the main committee's report, is what we call in common call the screening committee. And that becomes the position of the caucus.
Does the executive committees very often reject the recommendations of the subcommittee?
No.
Change them?
In some cases, yes. We've had in a few instances where the main committee, this is not the executive committee.
Well, the main committee.
The main committee.
The main, no.
Will, in some instances, the main committee has rejected a subcommittee's report. For example, we had one time subcommittee came up 50-50 with a recommendation that we not endorse. There are two candidates for the Supreme Court. And the subcommittee recommended that we not take a position. The main committee rejected that and took one of the members that the subcommittee had brought out. That's an example.
How about the main body of delegates?
Okay, this last year, our subcommittee came out for a recommendation for lieutenant governor. The main committee, after much debate on the subcommittee's report, accepted it. But the delegates, the next day, rejected it. And so, consequently, no position was taken.
Who did they recommend?
They had recommended Jerry Beasley. And the delegates rejected it, rejected him, and therefore no position was taken on Beasley.
Do most of the candidates, are they invited to
yes.
come? Do most of them come?
Yes.
Has that been changing in the last 4 years or 5 years or 10 years?
Yes. In fact...
When did it start to change? You just started this procedure 4 years ago?
Well, the procedure that we now have was initiated 4 years ago. We get the list of all of the candidates who are running for office. And we notify them that, here's an example here, all the candidates who ran for office in this list. We notify them that the Alabama Democratic Conference will hold its annual convention in Birmingham, Alabama on blank date. And as a candidate for office, you're invited to come. And of course, and if they desire to come, please let us know and we'll schedule a time for them. That's the end of it. We're finished with it. The candidates who want to come will notify us that they want to come. Then we schedule a time when they could appear before the committee. The Alabama League of Municipalities was meeting at the same time the Black Caucus was meeting in Birmingham. The League of Municipalities met in Mobile. But the candidates who ran for office were in Birmingham. That gives you some significance as to how important it is for candidates to be there.
Did most of them come at your invite?
They were there, all but George Wallace, of any significance. All other candidates were there.
Has that been changing? If you had done that 10 years ago, what would have happened?
No, well, 10 years ago they wouldn't have had a need because we didn't have any votes.
All right, 5 years ago.
Well, 5 years ago, I suspect not. I think we are probably more organized candidates. Candidates are realizing that it's nothing wrong with getting black support. It's not as popular anymore to use the black vote as an issue to defeat your opponent. Now, George Wallace did use this in 1970. The Black Caucus has never supported George Wallace. It's no secret. Everyone in this country knows that I'm adamantly against Wallace. Well, Wallace ran against Albert Brewer, which you know by now yourself. Of course, Wallace ran his campaign the last time against Albert Brewer by attacking the blacks, by attacking me personally. Just simply saying, if my opponent is elected, Joe Reed and the black folk and the blacks will run this state, the black militants will run this state. But to answer your question precisely, so 1970, it was used. Wallace used it effectively. McDonnell Galligan, who opposed Bill Baxley, tried to use it in a general election by running as an independent, failed miserably with it. I think George Wallace has been more effective in using that than anyone else. This last election, it was not used. I'm not so sure that why it was not used. I suspect that George Wallace felt he could get elected without using it, so it wasn't necessary to use it. But if he felt it had been necessary, he would have used it, I think.
Is it fair to say that white candidates before 1970 didn't actively seek black endorsements?
They have always...
I'm talking about organization endorsements long before the election. I'm not talking about the night before. Traditionally, wasn't it the case that if you got a black endorsement with an organization, you wanted it the night before the election and not before that?
Well, he wanted it as early as he could get it. He wanted it publicized the night before.
Yeah.
He wanted it as early as he could get it. But to answer your question,
Has that changed?
We, for example, do not publicize our endorsements now unless the candidate wants it publicized. So even to this day, it's not as clear. Because there's some evidence we've had that there are some whites, even to this day, will oppose a candidate if they know that the black organization is supporting. We know this is pretty authentic. We know this from fact. And fact means oppose.
But when you had your convention, when was it, in May?
Yeah.
What happened then? Was there a public meeting in which
these
names were revealed?
There was a public meeting. We introduced all candidates who appeared, and all the candidates were there. The Supreme Court judges were there. I said, that's the Supreme Court right across the street, I guess what I'm pointing at. Secretary of State, the candidate for governor was there. All the candidates who were seeking office were there, with the exception of two of any significance, okay? And they were introduced. So there was no secret that they were there. That the only thing that happened, that the public didn't know which one of those candidates that we selected. And we notify, we work that through our organizations. It's a matter of time, however, it's a matter of time before we have to ultimately go public on all of them. Because you have your political groundhogs who come out of their holes 3 months before the election working for candidates. Many times they'll go out and say that we have an endorsement of the Alabama Democratic Conference. I'm working for the Democratic Conference. And they may be working for a candidate that the Democratic Council has opposed. So there are some hazards in not publicizing who we are supporting. Now, did publicize the fact that we were supporting Gene McClain against George Wallace because Gene McClain asked us to announce it publicly, and we did.
So you have an agreement with the candidates. If they want to publicize, you will do so. If not, you will not.
Well, it's not an agreement. It's a policy.
It's a policy.
In other words, and the candidate, the policy that the candidate have, that the candidate have the option. But
the way you then help the candidate is to let the people and the organizations and the counties know the night before the election?
Well, it's not necessarily the night before.
Well, a week before the election.
For example, we don't hold our annual meetings now the weekend before the election. At one time, we did. Mm-hmm. The organization is too big now. You can't get the word around. You're talking about 300,000 voters, and you're trying to get the word out to 300,000 people, or 200,000 who would like to vote. Your way. So to do this the weekend before, it's almost impossible. So for example, this year the election was May 7th, and we met April 20th, because it takes a good while to do it. And basically, most people know by and large who we're supporting, because we put out ballots. We put out ballots where I signed them. sample ballots recommending slated candidates, not only at the state level. We also work at the legislative level. And this year we had an experience we had not had before. That was, we had legislative districts that cut across county lines. Some counties were divided into two or three legislative districts. So what we did, we set up, our policy is that if a candidate was running for the legislature within the boundaries of a particular county, that local organization handled that, okay? But if it crossed county lines, it was no longer a local matter. It became a state matter because you had two counties or two or more counties involved. So then it was necessary to set up a committee made up of persons from that legislative district to screen those legislative candidates. And the legislative candidates would meet before the local screening committee for, say, Senate district number, whatever district was, 35, 33, 30. That candidate met with blacks in that legislative district, and they made a recommendation to what candidate they were going to support. And the state organization has just simply accepted that, because that committee was a state committee anyway. So that committee would make the recommendation as to who we would support. And that's the way it was done. That's the way we support legislative candidates. Local candidates that run within, any candidate that runs within the boundaries of a particular county, whether it is legislative or not, is left entirely to the local organization of the Alabama Democratic Congress. Now, certainly from time to time, we have been asked, how about candidate X? What do you have on candidate Y? And then, of course, we will supply that information when and where it was needed. But basically, that's the way we operate in this state on political candidates.
How effective is it?
It's pretty good. It's pretty damn effective.
Are you building more unity among blacks on political matters or less?
More. And I'll tell you exactly why I think we're building more. The first screening committee I participated in, it disturbed me. This is not a criticism of my predecessors, because God, they went too far more than I did. So I was executive secretary of the Black Teachers Association. The state superintendent of education, I was elected then by the people at large, popular election. There was a kind of an informal understanding that the Black Teachers Association ought to have the influence, ought to have a say as to who they wanted for state superintendent of education, okay? So it was kind of a quasi-understanding that if the black teachers wanted candidate X, the entire black caucus would support candidate X because the black teachers wanted, okay? That particular meeting disturbed me because we were there discussing candidates and debating what candidates the blacks should support, but not a single candidate was there. And there were only about 25 individuals there. Now that's a good caucus, 25 individuals. And maybe at the time we did not have the votes we have today, so maybe that was enough. But it disturbed me because I didn't see enough involvement. And what, to me, the only way to deliver is to have enough people saying this is the guy. And we are effective in Alabama because we have enough people saying this is the guy. If you have 200 leaders from across the state of Alabama, 6 or 7 counties, who attended a state meeting and endorsed these and interviewed these candidates, and if they can go back home and say, I was there, we talked to him, and this is what we voted on as a people, you're damn right you're going to be affected. Because you have, failure is almost impossible because you got enough people saying it.
That's assuming you've got one black political organization and that organization functions without factions.
Well, even with factions, even with factions. And we have factions in Alabama, and I would be the last one to suggest it. We don't. I don't think that every candidate that the ADC has endorsed, every black person in Alabama voted for him. I know that I'll be the last one to suggest that. I would say that I don't know of any candidate there. At this point, there are no what I call major factions in the state. By and large, we have tried to utilize even those who may differ with me personally, and which is perfectly...
But do you see the growth of those factions increasing or decreasing, say, in the next 6 years, by 1980?
I see that unless people are involved, with the continuing involvement, I see the faction probably lessening to some extent. Now, let me give you why I say that. A person doesn't become a leader by simply knowing themselves and saying, I'm a leader. All right? At least I don't feel that way. I think the thing that we have, there's a growing number of black elected officials in Alabama, which is 4 years ago, 6 years ago, we did not have. To me, that's a force to be reckoned with. And when I say reckoned with, I mean that's a force you don't ignore. So to me, the thing to do is to involve the black elected officials as much as possible in the organization.
They don't have their own organization.
No, they have a black elected officials organization, but it's not partisan. We Democrats, we are partisan as hell. We hell, no questions as where we are. The Democratic primary is the election for all practical purposes in Alabama, like most of the southern states. So to me, when the black elected officials were elected, first of all, the Alabama Democratic Conference helped many of these guys to get elected. That's number one. We encouraged many of them to run for office. Not all of them, no. Most of them, yes. So, as they are elected, to me, you're strengthening the conference.
Does the conference play any active role in voter registration?
Yes.
To what extent?
To the extent that we have in all meetings, for example, we hold meetings throughout the year, congressional district meetings. Voter registration is emphasized. We try to even collect money to help people get people to the polls for voter registration. I talk about our annual dinner. Well, our annual dinner, for example, is a fundraising affair. Aside from that, we assess our counties so much to run the organization. We have a small staff. And we also spend funds to get people to the polls on election day.
Do these funds come from candidates you endorse?
No, they don't come from candidates we endorse. Funds come from primarily from our local counties. Now all candidates are invited to participate in the dinner, where they will buy tickets. We don't give tickets to any candidates, but by and large, while labor unions, for example, have 1970, went to the labor unions, helped us in the voter registration drive, the same as they helped Southern Christian Leadership Conference and other groups. But our funds come primarily from our county units and our fundraising efforts. And sometimes I give a speech, you know, things like that.
For a fundraising dinner, for example, how much are tickets?
$20.
And how many people are you usually have?
One group had 800. But this past year, 700 people was turned out.
What percentage of that is black?
I guess 65%. 35% of the attendance in this meeting is white. The men are candidates. Candidates here lobbied like hell there. They come to the meeting, they're lobbying. You know, Congressman Walter Flowers, for example, our organization did not endorse him. Walter Flowers came to our meeting, I guess, at 9 o'clock that morning. I mean, you know, lobbying delegates. You know, that's fine with us. But the only thing we require is that when the caucus makes a decision, that everybody abide by it. But that's an example of lobbying. Every candidate in Alabama has been before, or been a significant, been before our caucus, with except for Governor Wallace.
Was he invited?
Yes, he was invited. We sent a form letter to all candidates. No candidate received any special invitation. Everybody got a form letter.
How is the recommendation of the caucus binding?
They're not binding.
You said everybody would be bound by it.
Well, we expect, in other words, we expect everybody to be bound by it. I mean, you can't enforce it. If a group goes out and violates the conference's recommendation, and certainly next time around, that group will not be participating. To that extent, it's binding. They'll be out there on their, they'll be on their own.
Has your organization or anyone else that you know of made a really thorough analysis of the voting, black voting, predominantly black voting precincts in the last governor's election?
No, we haven't. We have looked at some of them.
Has anybody done it?
To my knowledge, no. To my knowledge, no. Emory Jackson might have done some, I think he did some, but he's probably the only guy outside of
Who
Alabama.
Is he?
Emory Jackson is the editor of this black newspaper in Birmingham. He's been around for some time.
Could we go back to the point again about factions? Because
yes.
It seems to me that as you build a larger and larger voting bloc, raise more and more potential leaders and real leaders, that you
right.
increase the chance for more and more factions. What I was asking, do you see that happening here now, or do you see it happening in the future? Or as you bring up leaders, you build more factions.
The potential is greater as we build.
Yeah.
We are mindful of that. And every effort is being made to avoid factions. We have it now. We have individuals now, for an example, who do not support the conference. For example, Mayor Cooper in Mobile doesn't support the conference, even though he claims he does. We had some differences this time around. There were some individual blacks who supported Governor Wallace. They took their stands individually. Those we cannot do. I took issue with them individually. Mayor Ford at Tuskegee, Judge William Branch at Greene County, Sheriff John Hewlett, and Lowndes County were the three elected officials that I know who endorsed Governor Wallace. They endorsed him far in advance of the state organization's meeting. But when the organization met, I mean, of course they weren't there. They haven't participated in the organization hardly anyway. But, so yes, your factions are there. How important, how much they grow, it will depend, I think, on how well we respond to the needs of the black constituents in Alabama. The faction is going to grow. It'll grow if we sit back and not involve people, if we sit back and don't address ourselves to the common needs. I think that the factions have been, what potential factions we have been minimized by the fact that everybody gets a letter to come to this caucus. I have a standing list of all black elected officials, for example. They get letters to come. And somebody's going to ask every time, well, weren't you invited? And it's difficult for a black to say that I'm not going to support the candidate that all other blacks are supporting. Because here's a risk that you run. And that is whether or not somebody's paying him to work for them individually. And unanimity on white candidates is not awfully hard to get anyway. The further away from home you get, the easier it is to get unanimity. It's much easier to get unanimity on a governor's race than it is to get one on a local mayor's race. The closer you get home, the less unanimity you can get. But by and large, the growth of factions, as I see it, of course, we all know what Jefferson talked about, faction in the Federalist Paper number 10. You're going to have them. You can't avoid faction. Now, the question is how much they minimize. I don't know whether I responded to you.
Follow up on your point. As you move down the ballot, does the conference get more and more effective? Or as you say, it's easier to get unanimity the further away you get from home.
Well, that's not only for the conference, that's for any election. I'm thinking about people now generally.
Yeah, but is it also true of the conference?
I think so. I found this, that we may be 95% effective on the governor's race, or you may be only 80% effective on the local candidate's race, okay? Two or three reasons. We found also that people don't vote as much for, say, local candidates as they do for, well, you really get this in your ballot. At the governor's race, you get a lot. And as further you move down with state officials, the fewer votes you get, the fewer votes they get. We found this to be a pattern in this state. Then, once you get back down again to your local sheriff's race, you pick up again. Congressional district candidates, legislative district candidates will get fewer. It is easier, and it's simple to me, I don't have a hard time understanding why you get more unanimity at the state level, because the candidates are far removed than their local leaders. But we have been effective, and I would say 80% effective at all levels, by and large. There are some kind
of... What do you mean by effective, that your endorsement was related to a win?
That's right.
Your assessment of the impact of George Wallace on Alabama, the white community and the black community.
I heard you stated it again.
What's your assessment of the impact of George Wallace on Alabama, the state of Alabama?
Okay. I think that Wallace has set Alabama back over the last 12 years he's been in control of the state, in control of the state government. I think that he's done a lot to divide blacks and whites. Wallace has never offered positive leadership in terms of trying to get the citizens of the state to look forward and look to the future. Wallace has been more concerned about helping himself, whatever avenue he had to walk to achieve that goal, then that's what he was, I think, primarily. I think basically, deep down, George Wallace is a racist. Deep in his heart, he's one. I just think that as political times, as political climate changes, I think basically he will adjust, because he understands too there are certain realities that, just like I understand the reality that I can't run for governor of Alabama because I'm black, and irrespective of how many quiet allies I can pick up, I can't pick up enough to be elected governor. The same thing he sees, that he cannot continue to find a place in history as a racist. So efforts are now being made to minimize that, and he feels that he needs blacks generally, and Alabama blacks in particular, to say what this guy is all right now. To get back to your original point, he's had a definite impact. I think Wallace is one thing he's helped in some respect to unify blacks. I think that by Wallace's negative acts, of course, of Alabama officials, every major civil rights bill, if you would look back, Alabama had a part in it. 1957 Voting Rights Act was passed primarily because of what Alabama officials were doing to black PhDs in Tuskegee, Alabama, aside from other things. The 1960 Civil Rights Bill was passed because of what George Wallace and John Patterson tried to do to the 1957 Civil Rights Act. the 1964 Civil Rights Bill was passed because, among other things, Birmingham, Alabama. The 1965 bill was passed, among other things, what happened in Selma, Alabama. Based because of the inability, because of we had so many short-sighted officials in the state, the impact on the black community that we finally got the nation to see, and the federal government to see, that you're not going to rectify these conditions until you do something about it. Has Wallace made a contribution to, any positive contributions to Alabama? I fail to see any. And I've looked and listened with a thirsty ear. I have not been able to really pinpoint anything positive that he has done that we should say, well, if it had not been for George, this probably would not have been done. It was positive. Now, I know we talk about a lot what we've done in education, but Alabama has a special education trust fund that comes from primarily from the income tax and sales tax. So when inflation and sales tax is high, it goes in this trust fund. This is something that Wallace didn't create. The only thing the governor has to decide with the legislature is where are you going to spend the money, not how you get it. The money is going to be in the trust fund, whoever's got it. I use that.
When was that created, that trust fund?
Oh, back in 1930-something. Long time ago. So, on the white community, I think he's really taking advantage of the white community. Because that group is the group that elected him all the time. And he played on our fears. And so his impact has been primarily a negative one. And I've searched sincerely, and I just have not been able to point out anything like I said, had not been for Wallace, this management may not have been done. Where I could say, if I'm talking about John F. Kennedy, maybe some things I could point out that Kennedy brought there. Said Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, point to Eisenhower's highway program. A lot of things we could talk about. You say, had not been this may not have been done. I cannot say the same thing for this state. Did I answer your question?
Mm-hmm. The basic question being asked today is, has he changed?
No. I don't think so. And I have analyzed that because there are some people who said he has changed. First of all, I would like to take the man at his word. He said he has not changed. He said, I haven't changed. He said, the other people have changed. And they are coming telling me now that what I was saying all along was right. So I take him at his word first, that he has not changed. Okay? Now, let's go to another. Let's assume that the evidence, let's assume he was saying one thing and the evidence was another. But the evidence supports what he is saying. Now, there's a suit pending right now in federal court over because Wallace had discriminated against blacks in political appointments. When Wallace has had the opportunity to appoint blacks, he has not appointed blacks. For example, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the judge on the Court of Civil Criminal Appeals, and the Lieutenant Governor recommended that Wallace would put a black on the Board of Correction. No, strike the Board of Correction, the Pardon Parole Board. No, he wouldn't do that. And he could have done it. He had a vacancy and had a good man. The guy they proposed was not what he would call a militant. Well, hell, you know, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and Lieutenant Governor, all were white. not going to send a black militant over to George Wallace. He said, no.
Just as how recently?
3 months ago. I said, three, mate, give me six now.
This year?
This year.
1974.
Yes. That was a...
Has he appointed blacks to boards and commissions?
I read 2 days ago where he appointed a black to the Alabama Education Television Commission. And it's one of the most fruitless appointments one could possibly make.
For most, how about the other boards and commissions?
He appointed a black to the Youth Advisory Council. These appointments were made in the last year. This one was made.
But on the regulatory and other boards and commissions?
Positions of power, no.
None?
No. Positions of power, no.
But he appoints most of those boards and commissions,
he
right?
Appoints practically everyone who serves on the board now in Alabama. Not practically everyone.
For the higher education?
Is a Wallace appointee.
The University Board of Trustees is an exception to that.
Well, yes. I would think except University of Alabama Board of Trustees.
How about the State Board of Education?
It's elected.
Well, he's supposed to have started this transformation 2 years ago, or about 2 years ago after his injury. But you don't see any objective or empirical evidence that indicates change?
No, I don't. And,
how about the crowning of the Queen?
He does that every year anyway. So it just so happened that the kids at the University of Alabama had elected a queen who happened to be black, and the governor crowns the queen every year. Now, it's impossible for him to come up this year, so I'm not going to crown the queen. I mean, he's been doing it all the time. So I'm not going to crown this one. Then I'll start back next year. So the crowning of a queen, for a duty that you've been doing all the time, that's nothing, that's... Somebody said he spoke to the black mayors of Alabama. What the hell? He's always spoken to segregated groups. Like he spoke to some black mayors. He doesn't tell me that he's changed. I don't know about...
You say he's always spoken to segregated groups. Has he spoken to black groups?
Surely he spoke to... George Wallace met with a group of civil rights leaders the day following the sale of Montgomery March, right in the state county. That was following... Okay. So that's an example. I'm sure that he spoke at Alabama State University 5 years ago.
Your position then is his